Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It just means more at Utah, clearly. Take that, SEC. You're not threatening to nuke the town if you can't beat a Mountain West team.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
You feel good, and you just need to tell your quarterback not to jump from the 5-yard line into the end zone. That's a problem.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Oh, I am just going to pour sunshine all over the University of Missouri for their effort to keep Brian Harsin employed.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. And you know, a lot of people are listening to this on Monday morning, or they're listening Sunday night, and they've got kind of a Monday morning blues. Maybe you're not feeling all that great about yourself. One thing, we're here to prop up our listeners because we love you. We care about you.
Yes.
Your mental health. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to know that no matter how bad things are going, it could be worse. You could be the defensive coordinator for the Warner University Royals. Perhaps he is a fine individual. I'm sure he is an upstanding member of the community at the small Christian school in Lake Forest, Florida. It's the one right by Orlando. Lake Worth. Maybe it's like, whatever. Who knows? There's a school. It's called Warner University, Lake Wales. It's an NAIA school. Did you watch any of the Warner game?
I did not. I had no idea Warner existed until that score came across.
Well, yeah, they played the Stephen F. Austin. I always appreciate Stephen F. Austin, making sure we don't confuse it with Stephen G. Austin or Stephen P. Austin or anybody. It's all these Stephen Austins out there, right? Stephen F. Austin handed it to the Warner Royals 98-0. 98. Warner is NAIA. Stephen F. is FCS. The box score on this thing is absolute a joy.
Unless you're Warner.
Let me read it to you. First quarter, touchdown, 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 touchdown. Second quarter, touchdown, 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 field goal. Six seconds left.
They got to stop. There you go.
No, they ran out of time on the clock. Six seconds. Darn it. Third quarter, safety, touchdown, field goal. At that point, I think it's not appropriate to kick the field goal at that point, 41-yarder. I guess maybe going for it's worse. That made it 71-0. And then I think everybody in attendance, if anybody attended, was like, are we going to do this? Fourth quarter, touchdowns, 8:55 left. And then just crap starts happening. Stephen F. Austin with a touchdown with six on a punt return. They return the punt. Now, at this point, they've played everybody on the roster. Four quarterbacks played. They all threw touchdown passes. 6:58 left. Stephen F. Austin hits a punt return to make it 85-0. Okay. Next play. Warner gets the ball at their 35-yard line. Pass intercepted. Actually, it was at the 20. I'm sorry. At the 20. Pass intercepted. Stephen F. Austin takes over at the 18. One play, touchdown pass, a touchdown run. It is now 92-0. There's 6:32 left. Warner kicks it off. I don't want to say their name. I just feel bad for these guys because it's not their fault. So an unidentified player for Warner tries to return the kick, hammered, fumble on the 15-yard line. Oh, boy. Next play. Robert McGrew of Stephen F. Austin runs it in. 98. Now, what does Stephen F. Austin do?
You do not go for two. I can tell you that.
1 point gets him the Gretzky. 2 points gets him the 100. Pat, you would not be the Stephen F. You can coach Stephen P. Austin. They went for two.
Oh, my God.
Unless they took a knee. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they took it. I think they took a knee.
Did they take a knee?
Okay. They acted like they were going for two, and they took a knee.
Okay. Ends at 98. Wow. There's still 6:17 left. Warner has to convert two third downs to finally run out the clock. And by the time they turn it over on downs, Warner only has a little time left, and they just take a knee. 98 zip. I wanted to see the 100.
Of course you did. This Ross, in case you didn't know, this is from a man who once coached a 32-0 youth soccer game.
Dan Wetzel.
That's true.
Out of that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
32
you
nothing.
Racked up they 32 got balls over on the other side. Other group
you learn to defend little girls. First off, the 32-0 game, we told the other coach, it was a little indoor field. You can't score 32 on a field with the balls, but it was an indoor field like hockey boards. They were young. I told the other coach, put extra players on the field. You can have like, we got five, you can have like eight. I don't care. Whatever, we're killing you. It's just 25-0. You can put extra guys out there. He goes, my team, this is a true story. These girls are probably like 7, 8 years old. He goes, my girls need to learn how to lose.
Oh boy.
At that point, wow. I'm like, all right, you're gonna freaking learn. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go. Wow.
Should have gone for the 100.
Of course, that guy wanted to see 100.
Absolutely.
Poor Warner. Warner, I.
Poor well, Warner. What are you doing? You don't mess with the Stephen F. Austin.
That was probably a bad idea scheduling them. They lost 44-7 to something called Kaiser University in their opener. They lost 52-3 to the University of West Florida. They lost 49-22 to Florida Memorial University.
Florida Memorial? Like, are the people dead? That sounds like
Hey.
You spend your time at Florida Memorial, and it's like that's either a cemetery or a hospital.
Look, this thing is so fly-by-night that they actually play Florida Memorial and Kaiser University again in October. So, like, this is
one of those schools that are like, hey, pay us $35,000 a year to come here, and you get to keep playing football. And then, this is kind of the Bishop Sycamore of
exactly.
98. It's just not easy. You just run out of time. Anyway, no matter how bad your day is, and we're going to get to some bad ones.
Oh, yeah. We are.
All right, so it was an eventful weekend, really good weekend of football. A lot happening, a lot of results that matter, not involving NAIA schools. I want to play a little game. You know, I love the games, the gimmicks. Pain or pride? Let's be optimistic. Pride or pain? On the pride, on a scale of between pride and pain, where is each of these programs going? I'm not going through every freaking program. Georgia, I think you're very prideful. I'm not touching that. People are like, oh my God, they didn't win 98-0 against Kent State. Okay, they'll be all right.
Yeah.
This is the hangover. This is the, keg party stage of the season. But some of these teams won, some lost. So where are you? Are you panicked? Maybe it's a panic or pride.
Panic or pride. There you
go. Panic or pride. What did I call it? Pain. Panic.
Panic.
Whatever. Let's go. Let's play some soccer. 32 zip. Clemson, Pat 40. They go down to the Winston and the Salem, take them both on, get to OT, fail on the two-point conversion, would have given us a nice cover.
Yeah.
But win, pull out a victory against Wake Forest by six. Wake Forest gets no credit because they're called Wake Forest, but it's a pretty good football team. So are you prideful right now if you were Clemson? Or are you in panic mode going, I don't know, man.
Well, by recent Clemson standards of are we going to make the playoff and compete for the national championship, I'd be a little bit panicked because their secondary is horrible. Holy moly. As Dabo himself said, I was at the game. Dabo said after the customary, 3-hour cooldown period for Clemson, the slowest team in America to actually get around to the media.
A lot of cooling.
Yeah. He said, we gave up 6 touchdown passes, but we didn't give up 7. That's the only good thing I can say about it. That's it. I mean, their secondary is bad. See? And Wake Forest knew it going in. Wake Forest is like, yeah, we're challenging them deep. They can't cover. And boy, they were right to do it. And then they actually let them off the hook by being too conservative at the end of regulation. But if I'm Clemson and I want to try to win a national title, not with that secondary. I'd be very proud of DJ Uiagalelei, who really resuscitated his career. I mean, he was great. He carried them and brought them back when it looked like they had were on the verge of losing there. Happy for him. Really nice young man. Played a phenomenal game. And, you know, just made the throws that we had seen him make in 2020, but rarely, if ever, saw him make in 2021. So I'd be proud of DJ Uiagalelei, but I'd be panicked about the state of the defense and panicked about the chances of competing for a national championship. Big, big game now to turn around, and they host NC State, and we'll see where they're at for that one.
Ross, pride or panic?
Well, I would have said panicked as well had DJ not played so well. Instead, I come away from that game, as Pat kind of mentioned, like really, if I'm a fan of Clemson, really excited about the way he played. And he finally had that game like against a good team, like on the road, that everybody was kind of waiting on, that the expectation was there last year for and just never really came. And so I come away, instead of panic, because they don't – Clemson – for a second year in a row, right, looks beatable, and that's something we hadn't seen in years. But DJ's performance has me thinking that waking up feeling a little prideful if I'm a Clemson fan. I mean, he accounted for, I think, almost 500 yards or so, it seemed like, over 400, 5 touchdowns. So I come away feeling pretty good about things, but – yeah, as Pat said, that's a big one next week, right? Big ACC showdown in Clemson. Game day, I think, announced this morning they're going to be there. So it's a big one.
All right. Start with you, Ross. USC Trojans, 17. Oregon State Beavers, 14. So Lincoln Riley stays unbeaten out in L.A. They go up to Corvallis for this game. Takes a late touchdown, though. At Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison with 1:13 left for the TD. 84-yard drive to win it. Panic, or are you prideful right now?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at it from the standpoint before the season, I would think they'd be prideful at 4-0. But, you know, taking the last 3 or 4 weeks into account, I would think that they're waking up a little panicked this morning, especially this line. 16 of 36, 180 yards and a touchdown. That's Caleb Williams' line, certainly the worst he's had in quite some time. Maybe his college career. I'd have to go look back on Oklahoma stats last year. But that was a struggle. Jonathan Smith does have it going at Oregon State. I mean, he's really built that program really well. But I think the fact that USC's offense struggled that much is a concern. Also, there's a stat, you know, that kind of went viral yesterday going around social media of USC. It's they've had 14 takeaways in 0 turnovers through 4 games. That's a great recipe to go 4-0. But it's also, you know, probably opportunistic/luck on there as well. So you're not going to get that always. So I'm a little panicked if I'm waking up as a Trojan.
No, I'm feeling proud. I'm fine with going to Corvallis against a good team and pulling that out, finding a way to win. They had been front running through those 3 games. Get ahead, stay ahead, knock people out. Wasn't the case this time. You got to find a way to win, and they did it. And the turnover stat is not sustainable. That is true. And there's probably going to come a time when you're -2 turnovers. Can you win then? Maybe not. But I look at the schedule. I think they're going to be undefeated when they go to Utah. And I look at this. Look, this program was a sandwich last year, right? They were terrible. And they have made great strides forward. They're making plays on defense. They made enough plays offensively to win the game. Caleb Williams had one of those games like Joe Montana used to have in college where he's does nothing until it's the last drive. And okay, now we just got to do it. And I'll just take us down and we're going to win. So, you know, that I'll take that from my quarterback, especially if he's having a bad game. So, no, I'm proud if I'm USC. Like, we're way better than last year. We are on course to where we want to be. Bring it on.
I am. I would go good. I mean, I think Oregon State's going to be one of the better teams in the Pac-12. And same thing with the Wake game in Clemson. Go into those environments, that exciting game. These are two good teams. Good victory. All right. Pride or panic, Oklahoma Sooners. Kansas State walks into Norman for the third time in 4 years, I think.
Yeah.
Or are they not the third time? They beat them for the third time in 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
41-34 knocks Oklahoma down. K-State's really good. They just lost to Tulane, which is not really a bad loss. But, man, they got to be kicking themselves on that right now. Pride or panic? We'll start with you, Pat.
Panic. Absolute panic. Bad day for Sooner Nation. You have to watch Lincoln Riley pull it out to go 4-0 while your team flops at home against Kansas State. And there wasn't a lot of fluke to that. I mean, they were behind the whole game. Kansas State just rolled up and down the field. Happy for Adrian Martinez, the Nebraska transfer, who played great. You know, he was a good soldier at Nebraska, took his lumps there, tried to be a team leader. Team sucked, but now he's on a much better team, let's face it. But he gave up 500 yards, 6.1 yards of play, 41 points. I was told, Dan, by the quick rebound Oklahoma fans who wanted to post pictures with their new significant other after being dumped by the old one, things are better now. We're better off with Brent Venables. We're going to be tougher. We're going to be better on defense. Well, your defense just got trucked by K-State again. I'm panicking if I'm Oklahoma.
I am in panic mode as well. It's bizarre, right? Kansas State, just like, you know, I hate to use the cliche, but has the number, right? Twice. This is the second time in, I guess, 3 years they've won at Oklahoma.
Third and four.
Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah, I saw a pretty incredible stat about, like, for 40 years, Kansas State had you know, X amount of AP top 10 wins, and they've got more of them just on the Oklahoma wins in the last 4 years or something. It's crazy. But, yeah, I'm panicked. If I'm a Sooners, I'm panicked, mostly defensively, right? My team gave up, like, 500 yards of offense against Adrian Martinez and a Kansas State team that lost a week before to Tulane, which, of course, Tulane then lost to Southern Miss last night. So it's, crazy day of college football. But I'm definitely panicked. I'm not feeling great about things. The good thing is nobody in the Big 12, except maybe for Kansas, looks like, you know, looks great. So maybe it's theirs for the taking anyway.
Well, this is going to be that's an interesting point I was just going to bring up. Oklahoma goes at TCU, which just beat SMU.
TCU's unbeaten.
Unbeaten. Yeah. Then they get Red River.
Yep.
Texas just lost to Texas Tech. Who the hell knows? Then they get the mighty Kansas Jayhawks coming to town. I don't know what to make. That could be three easy games. It could be three terrible games. But they got a little work. Big 12's crazy. It's a crazy league. So who knows?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a whole lot of pride right now in Norman. So my bit isn't really that good for that one. Speaking of Kansas, any pride or panic? Are you panicked, Pat, that they didn't cover against Duke again? Another nasty backdoor cover.
Are you kidding?
This is the most prideful thing ever. Holy crap! Kansas is 4-0. They're going to get ranked. We're doing this before the poll, but they assume they're ranked.
Yeah. Oh, there's no panic at all. It's just delirium. Just like, are you kidding? We're actually 4-0. They haven't won four games since when? Like 2010? So, I mean, this is actually 2009. This is like the greatest season for some Kansas fans can remember since 2007. So, I mean, roll with it, baby. It's all good. Lance Leipold should get a lifetime contract.
Man, lifetime contract. Bill Self's got one, right?
That's right. I know. Impressive, man. It's and how about, you know, my Heisman, short sample? What do we do?
Small sample Heisman.
Small sample. Short sample. What am I doing? It's early.
Save it. Save it. Don't give away the cow for free.
No. But that was mine from last week. Showed out again. I mean, he had an even better game against Duke. It was impressive to watch him. He's just fun. Fun to watch. And yeah, the Kansas Jayhawks feeling real good about themselves, and a big one coming this week at Iowa State.
Kansas controlled the game. I know it was Duke, but it's also a game where a program like Kansas, that all of a sudden everyone's talking about, sold out, everyone around campus and town are excited. That's the one where all of a sudden it's like, oh God. And you stumble.
Right.
Kansas wins seasons from 2010, 3 wins. This is their win totals. 3-2-1, 3-3-0-2-1, 3-3-0-2 until this year. And they now have 4. That number, 3-2-1, 3-3-0-2-1, 3-3-0-2, is coincidentally or not like a secret mathematical formula that allows us to like rotate Mars and land people there. And turns out NASA.
I thought maybe it was the nuclear codes at Utah for the reactor there.
We'll get to that. I think NASA was just waiting for Kansas football to provide the secret code. And they did it. So we owe Turner Gill, Charlie Weiss, David Beatty, and Les Miles. No one could come up with that number. The Powerball is 4 now. No, I don't. They're 4-0. Fantastic.
They've unlocked the Mars lander.
They unlocked it. All right, Ross, Pride or Panic, Tennessee Volunteers.
Ooh,
they get game day. Yeah. They checkerboard up the stadium. They beat Florida 38-33 in Knoxville. I'm not guessing a lot of panic, but go ahead.
No, yeah, I'm definitely feeling pride in the Volunteers. And really, it should have been, that margin of victory. The old Gators, the old backdoor cover there. We had a lot of those yesterday, and the Gators came back to cover it, because this game didn't ever really feel in doubt in the second half at all. Vols just looked really good. Hendon Hooker, quarterback, he's scrambling everywhere. He's throwing balls downfield deep. He looks really good. And the Vols in general, I mean, Tennessee's offense looks amazing. I think they're averaging like 550 yards of offense a game. They're just scorching people. So I'm feeling big time pride. Get a bye week, which is a nice rest for them before 2 very big games at LSU and against Alabama at home.
Yeah, for sure. It's loud and proud Rocky Top for Tennessee. Anytime you beat Florida, given how rarely they had beaten Florida during this long malaise, you take it and run with that. So that was a great win. And Dan, you laid it out there. I mean, as Ross said, this was a big scene, a big stage, big expectations, and Tennessee delivered on that stage. And that's without Cedric Tillman, their best receiver, too. So to roll up that many points and yards without him, that says all the more. Like, Hendon Hooker's probably at the top of my Heisman ballot right now. He's just been phenomenal, perfect fit in Josh Heupel's offense. And how bad does Virginia Tech miss him at this point? But it's all pride for Tennessee at this moment.
Miami Hurricanes. The U, licking their wounds after losing to A&M, come home. Apparently drown their sorrows at South Beach and watch the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders hang 45 on them, 45-31 loss. They gave up a 71-yard touchdown pass, a 69-yard touchdown pass, and a 98-yard touchdown pass. DJ England Chisholm for Middle Tennessee State is faster than all the Hurricanes. Worse, an actual hurricane is coming to Florida. Right. Not Miami. Everyone duck, be safe. 507 yards. Any pride here? Pat, we'll start with you on this one.
Shrill shrieking, top of the lungs panic. There's nothing else to say about it. I mean, what a complete debacle. That's about as bad as it gets for a program that is trying to think of itself as being back amongst the big time. I mean, you follow up that, you know, very disappointing game against A&M where you can't get in the end zone, score zero touchdowns, but you come home and completely overlook Middle Tennessee and lay an egg like that. I mean, and they benched Tyler Van Dyke, the quarterback. I might want to bench the secondary that can't tackle whoever that guy, that kid that you just gave his name there that ran all the long
England
touchdowns.
England Chisholm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I will say, Rick Stockstill makes $900,000 a year. Mario Cristobal is making $8 million. Good job, Rick Stockstill.
Miami's paying a basketball player that in NIL money.
Yeah. Right.
Scottsdale. He's like, what about Warner University?
Yeah. I need to reach out to team president John Ruiz and get his comment.
Yeah.
Busy yeah, trying dude. To build
he's
a stadium.
He's a big Twitter pop-off. Did he have anything to say? I'll look
I'm
it up.
Sure he did. I haven't looked. I'm sure he did. I'm sure it was
I follow him on Twitter. Yeah. He's always yelling at people about the stadium he wants to build in a park.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
After the plan to take over Coral Gables High School went awry when the people of Coral Gables said, we're using that. It's our high school.
All right.
I hope they get a stadium done. I don't care. John Ruiz is fine. But I always did like that plan. No, we need a high school. Sorry. Novel concept. He was going to build a new one, like inside the stadium, or I don't know what that
is. Anyway, he did a lot of tweeting through it yesterday.
You don't need a stadium to guard Middle Tennessee.
No. No, you don't. I mean, they played in an absolute dump of an Orange Bowl when they were at their best. So
yeah. Well, that was part of the charm. All right.
Yeah.
How about that line, by the way, the Middle Tennessee quarterback? 16 completions. 408 yards, 16 completions. Somebody tweeted, I think it was somebody from The Athletic tweeted, it was the highest yards per completion in an FBS game in at least 22 years, since at least 2000.
Was it 409?
I got 408 on here. 408, 16 completions, 408. Yeah.
And that's just insane.
It's absurd, yeah.
It's like 25 yards, pass.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, a little over 25 yards per completion. Not bad. That'll do it. Texas A&M Aggies. Much tumult, but here we are, 3-1. Mm. They win whatever these guys call the knockoff Red River. Off-brand Red River. The Walmart Red River.
Yeah.
Dollar Tree Red River. A&M and Arkansas in Jerry World, 23-21 with an assist from the top of the upright. Crazy game. No one can explain to me why KJ Jefferson decided to try to leap a 8-foot tall pile like 7 yards out. I don't know. I don't think Texas A&M deserved to win this game, but they won it. And at this point, do you really care? Pride or panic that this is still smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, I'm a little panicked. I've never seen that happen before in a game I was like watching live. People have sent me videos of it happening before, including like 3 weeks ago in a game at Wyoming where it bounced off the same thing. It bounced off the top upright or top of the right upright. But yeah, I'm a little panicked. Aggies just and now I tell you what, you know, the stats aren't great, but he certainly made plays when he needed to. Max Johnson, Brad's son at quarterback, they seem to maybe have something there that they can use. But I'm a little panicked here. I'm concerned about the whole ship because honestly, I think A&M for the most part was outplayed and got a little lucky, got a little opportunistic there late in the game. So I'm panicked, especially looking at my schedule. To my remaining schedule.
No doubt.
Then Alabama.
Yep. And South Carolina. They got 3 in a row on the road here.
Yeah. Coming.
So that's and then you're home against Mississippi, who's pretty good. You got Florida. They got losses coming. I'd be panicked. The offense still isn't doing much. And here's a little something. Ross and I wrote about this actually Sunday for Sports Illustrated. Just a short story, but an interesting scenario. If this game weren't played in Jerry World, if it weren't the knockoff Red River, if they were playing on campus, would the field goal have been good? NFL stadium uprights are 35 feet tall.
Oh.
Most college stadium uprights are 30 feet tall.
Gasp.
The college rule is just they have to be at least 30. So I cannot say with certainty. I have asked but have not yet gotten the answer from Arkansas whether their uprights are 30 or 35 feet. But if they're 30 feet, that ball goes over the top. Now, technically, that's still no good. It's got to be inside the upright. But that's a judgment call, at least. You got the official looking up saying, maybe that's good, maybe it isn't. So in an on-campus game, which these probably should be, Arkansas might have won that thing. But between that and the first down reaching the ball over the top of the pile, that's a no-no. If it's fourth down, maybe, as Sam Pittman said. So I think Texas A&M's very lucky. That offense is still not good. They've got a long way to go, and I don't know how they get there because their quarterbacks are just very pedestrian. Unless they're just going to grind out wins with defense, which they have the last couple of weeks primarily, they are Coach 8-4 is heading back to 8-4.
I think you got to reset expectations on A&M. So they beat two teams ranked at the time. I'm going to beat Miami. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if you beat Miami last week and then you watch Middle Tennessee run all over them and you feel very lucky about I don't know. He got these three road games. We will see what happens. The next two, the Alabama game is the one that's going to be particularly painful because my guess is they're going to, if it's 98-0, they're going for two.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They ain't taking a knee on the two. They're going for the two.
Yeah. I don't know. Or maybe he will as the ultimate humiliation. This is tough. But hey, they're 3-1. And I don't know. You know, it's not an easy one. But certainly this is not a national championship contender as what we have seen thus far. All right. On the flip. Arkansas, it's a tough loss. Probably should have won. They gave the game away. The field goal was crazy. Still 3-1. You get Alabama next week coming to your place. I mean, it would have been just an absolute monster game. My guess is that would have gotten the game day, the whole thing that places like Arkansas crave. And, you know, instead you got this. You got that L. What are your thoughts at Arkansas, Sam Pittman's program, heading into Alabama week that could have been special? Can you beat the Tide, Pat?
No, you can't beat the Tide. But, I mean, I'd still feel very bullish about the program in general and where you sit. You let one get away. There's no doubt about that, and that hurts. Because, again, this is a schedule that's not easy. You go Alabama at Mississippi State at Brigham Young. And then you still got LSU and Ole Miss. And I mean, there's a lot of tough sledding to come, but I mean,
you're relevant again. And that win over Cincinnati looks good. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You're exciting. This is good. Good for Arkansas.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I am not panicked at all. I'm proud. I just feel a little bit sick about having let that one get away, but you're probably heading to 3-2, and then after that, we'll see what you're made of. The next 2 weeks, those are big, big games at Mississippi State, at BYU.
Ross?
Yeah, I think you feel pretty good. Well, you don't feel good because you blew the game, but I think in the long run, in general, I think that you feel good, and you just need to tell your quarterback not to jump from the 5-yard line into the end zone. That's a problem. You know, we see that happen quite a bit, and that turned the game. It seemed like it just changed everything about the game, is that whatever ended up being 99-yard scoop and score lateral on the way.
Scoop and handoff and score. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, it's such a tough way. KJ is brutal. An incredible athlete. I'd never saw him as Vince Carter. Because he's going to jump over that French guy at the Olympics and get into the end zone. Like, best when your best player makes a thing. All right. Pride or panic? Michigan State Spartans. Tuck coming and giving up yards.
Yeah.
34, Minnesota 34. We'll get to you, Golden Gophers. 34-7. It was not that close. Absolute manhandling at the tune of 508 total yards for Minnesota, just 240 for Michigan State. They couldn't stop them. Minnesota had the ball 42 minutes and 30 seconds. Michigan State at home had the ball just 17 minutes and 30 seconds, just 14 first downs. Complete and total ass kicking. They scored a touchdown with 17 seconds left to save the shutout. How panicked are you about the state of Michigan State? You've got $100 million into a coach, and it's year three, and you're getting just run off the field by Minnesota. And, oh, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, all these guys are still to come. Pat.
Yeah. Complete panic. I mean, this is a worse situation than Miami, because the division you're playing in, that's the thing. I mean, these two losses, both of them were just complete annihilations. I mean, Washington wiped the field with Michigan State. Minnesota then comes to Spartan Stadium and wipes the field with Michigan State. That's bad. That is bad. And let's be honest, they overpaid Mel Tucker. Big time overpaid Mel Tucker. And now you have to sit there and wonder, oh my God, what did we do? Doesn't mean he can't do the job, but he's not earning his $9.5 million per year paycheck at this point. And based on resume, when they gave him the money there, he had one good season and that was it. You know, Kenneth Walker III, maybe the most valuable transfer in the history of football, comparing Michigan State after him and Michigan State with him. But it's bad. It's real bad. And I'm trying to figure out when they're going to win again. Do you think they're going to win at Maryland? I don't. Ohio State comes in? No. Wisconsin? Maybe, because Wisconsin sucks. At Michigan? No. At Illinois? No. Maybe Rutgers and Indiana late. I mean, you may be able to scrape out about five wins there, but that's all I can see right now on the schedule.
Yeah, real concerns. And, you know, the concerns are on Mel Tucker's side of the ball. I mean, he's a defensive guy, and defensively they have, been terrible last couple outings. Obviously, went out west and got drubbed, and then at home to Minnesota. I'm baffled that, think that maybe you look back at that last year's team that he put together there, and it was, you know, remember it was like, I don't know, it felt like 30 transfers on that team. He put together this team, and it was like almost like he put together this team for like 1 year, right? And then a lot of people were going to be leaving, and you got to replace all those guys. And we're going to be seeing this as we move forward. It's going to be something interesting to watch, is that it's kind of like, you know, the NFL putting together a team for a season. If you're going to do that with transfers, the next year, you better go do it again. You got to keep replacing these people and these players. So, but man, it's rough. You know, I think we all scratched our heads when that contract was announced last year. You know, I think a lot of people know that Mel Tucker's, that LSU and maybe some others at least reached out to Mel Tucker's folks and probably are what was behind that big raise. But man, I it's just, it's a good example, right, of what we're seeing throughout college football nowadays, is these incredible lucrative contracts given to people who haven't necessarily earned it. And that one was one of the more bizarre, and that one started what we're seeing, you know, from coaching contracts all over.
Well, look, is this, you know, this unfairly brings up the Charlie Weiss corollary, because Mel Tucker actually won the game that got him the big contract, where Charlie Weiss only lost to USC in the Bush push, and then got a story in the New York Post that the NFL was about to hire him, and Notre Dame panicked. But yeah, there is some little bits to it. And look, I wrote the column after Michigan State game last year. Like, if you guys think this is your next Nick Saban and you don't want him leaving to the same school, LSU, and you've got a billionaire like Matt Ishbia, who was prominently involved, this salary is nothing to him. Ishbia is worth $4 or $5 billion. I don't know what he's worth now, but former walk-on with Michigan State basketball. Sign him. You're going to have to overpay. They overpaid to get him originally out of Colorado because D'Antonio retired late. Remember that?
Yep.
But now you sit there and go, what do we got here? And I don't know. Tucker's like awesome guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seems like it should work, but this was an ass kicking. So I don't.
So are you saying that you're to blame for writing the column?
I'm not to blame. Okay. I'm not to blame. If I could get Matt Ishbia to waste his money, I would say this podcast is available for sponsorship, United Wholesale Mortgage, or I can be personally sponsored and I will come on here and say Michigan State will win the next 17 national championships for the right price. And Matt Ishbia is the most handsome and intelligent NCAA athlete of all time. So
yeah.
I am willing to waste his money or spend his money, but I do not believe that he's taking cues from me. However, this is what you had to do. On the flip, PJ Fleck, Minnesota, they're 4-0. They have outscored their opponents. Now, granted, New Mexico State, Western Illinois, Colorado, Michigan State, 183-24. Tanner Morgan looks really good. 3 TDs yesterday. Muhammad Ibrahim is really good. Their schedule is not bad. At Illinois, they get a big game at Penn State, or they play Purdue at Illinois, which is a very interesting game. At Penn State, Rutgers at Nebraska, Northwestern. I mean, those two suck. The Iowa core, who knows? God knows. And then at Wisconsin. Like, there's a real possibility here for Minnesota to do something really special this year. I'm guessing pride is high. Ross, you can start with Minnesota.
Yeah, pride very, very high. And they've just kind of like slipped in under the radar here at 4-0 of all the teams. I think there's 21 remaining teams that are 4-0, and they were the one I was most surprised at as I just was going through to compile the list. Because they, you know, their schedule hasn't been great. Their early season schedule hasn't been great at all. New Mexico State, WIU, Western Illinois University. And then, of course, they played probably the worst Power 5 team in the country in Colorado. And then they won at Michigan State. So they kind of crept in under the radar, but have looked great. And PJ Fleck got him rolling. Tanner mentioned Morgan. He missed 3 passes yesterday against Michigan State. Completed 23 of 26. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great start for Minnesota. I was a wait and see because the schedule literally was the worst in Power 5, even worse than Michigan's according to the Sagarin ratings. So I wanted to see them go play a good team or at least a competent Power 5 team on the road, and they did, and they just completely blew the doors off Michigan State. So I'm impressed. And here's the thing with Tanner Morgan. He was really good in 2019. He was not that good in 2020 or 21. He's really good in 22. What happened? All right. Well, his offensive coordinator in 2019 was Kirk Ciarrocca. In 2020, Kirk Ciarrocca left to go to Penn State. And then he was gone after that the next year, too. And now he's back. You put those two together and good things happen to the Minnesota passing game. So I think bringing him back has really helped Tanner Morgan kind of regain his mojo. He's accurate. He's not making mistakes. He can hit some big downfield shots. And you do that combined with that power running game. And I love the formula that Minnesota's put together so far. In a garbage division, they look like they could roll through it at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, look, if you're Minnesota, winning the West is a big deal.
Huge.
Huge deal. Get to Indy and whatever. But they're on their way because I think they do look really good. All right, last one we're going to do before we get to some other stuff. Northwestern. Lose 17-14 to Miami, Ohio.
Whew.
They defeated Nebraska 31-28 in Ireland. Nebraska's horrible. They lost to Duke. They lost to Southern Illinois. They lost to Miami, Ohio. They're now staring at Penn State, Wisconsin, Maryland, Iowa, Ohio State, Minnesota, Purdue, Illinois.
Whew.
1-11, not out of the question.
Nope.
This is supposed to, you know, the big joke with Pat Fitzgerald's program is the even numbers, they're good. This would represent 3 out of 4 terrible seasons.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's an absolute legend there. He has proven to be an exceptional coach at times, done great stuff with Northwestern. I think anyone ever put that, but at what point do you, I'm not saying he's going to get bumped, but at what point do you start with a little panic like, this is bad?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely panic for this season, and yeah, it's a tricky situation. It's a test of what Northwestern wants to be about, I would say, because Pat Fitzgerald is a Northwestern graduate, is a Northwestern legend as a player, as you said, from their highest days of when they went to the Rose Bowl. He is a Southside Chicago guy. He has stayed at that job because he loves the job. He's done really good work. He's won some big games. They've had some great seasons. They've won the West several times. But my goodness, the state of the program right now is bad. I mean, can you imagine when they got on that plane to come back from Ireland? And, you know, you're thinking, you're looking at the schedule like, man, we got Duke, Southern Illinois, and Miami of Ohio now all coming up at home. We can be 4-0, and you lose all of them. I mean, that's brutal. So I just have a hard time seeing them firing or even pressuring Pat Fitzgerald. And maybe you shouldn't. I mean, I'm not saying you should, but gosh, I mean, they were 3-9 last year. As Dan said, they could be looking at one win this year. In 2019, they were, I think, 3-9.
Yeah.
I mean, bad. And bad.
And I think the loyalty streak has to run two ways here. This guy could have left for 50 jobs.
Yeah.
He could have been Notre Dame's coach like three times over. And so I do not think Northwestern should be starting to get all, oh, well, we can do better than this. You probably can't, but something's got to give.
Yeah.
So this isn't good. All right. Before we get to small sample Heisman and say something nice, we did want to alert to this story. This stems from a week back. Utah's been in the news a lot. Good team. They had topless female fans. The women students of Utah are nuts. They're running around without shirts, painting their chests. No, I have no opposition to that. Neither did Ross. Pat was he was uncomfortable. And then we have this female student who last week was arrested after police say she threatened to detonate a nuclear reactor on the University of Utah's campus if the Utes did not beat San Diego State on Saturday. I want to repeat, she threatened to detonate a nuclear reactor. She went nuclear if Utah did not beat San Diego State. It's not even the BYU game. The 21-year-old woman was booked into Salt Lake County's jail for investigation of making a threat of terrorism. Yes, detonating a nuclear reactor?
Yeah.
Okay, like, terrorism, there's no, like, you can't be a little bit pregnant on terrorism. Like, I don't care if it's like, I'm going to take a slingshot and shoot things and hurt you in the arm or something. Like, that's wrong, too. But if you're going to nuke the whole city, Pat, what the hell is going on? It just means more at Utah, clearly.
Yeah,
apparently, right.
Take that, SEC.
This is an SEC story, man.
You're not trying to nuke the town if you can't beat a Mountain West team.
I will admit, I was a little caught off guard with this story coming out of Utah. And I did what we do on this podcast. We do deep reporting. We get after it here. And so I looked up the Nuclear Energy University program to see which universities have reactors. And there are many.
We're nuclear. Like, yes.
Yes. The ones that I thought would be more likely to go nuclear and destroy their town if they lost a game. Texas A&M, which actually has two of them.
Okay. Like Jimbo's ranches.
Texas has a nuclear reactor.
Oh, of course.
Florida has a nuclear reactor. Ohio State, Lord Almighty, plate fuel reactor. Please, Buckeyes, keep winning. Stay calm.
Somehow that survived the John Cooper era.
Yeah. Holy shit. And the 1-year Luke Fickell interim 6-6 season. But so I, you know, like Utah would not have been at the top of my list for most likely nuclear threat over potentially losing a game. But I salute to that woman for caring so deeply that she was ready to detonate all of Salt Lake City on behalf of the Utes.
This seems like a Florida story or Alabama or somewhere, yeah. Not Utah, bizarre. I just figured this one was coming out of some small town in southern Alabama or the Florida panhandle. But lo and behold, didn't know it meant so much to Utah, but so it
there was a does. Second. This is the second Utah student who threatened this year. There's a new social media thing called Yik Yak that and let this be a lesson to all of you on Yik Yak. I'm guessing our audience is probably not the Yik Yakers, but not. Tell your kids.
So this is like the next
tell
step
your sister, after tell your we little go brother.
From TikTok to Yik Yak.
Is that the thing? It's Yik Yak. Well, you can post anything. It's supposed to be completely anonymous. Guess what? Mm. If you threaten to nuke Salt Lake City, the cops will tell you how anonymous that is.
Exactly.
They're going to get you real quick. None of these apps are anonymous. So it's like they make fun of each other. They say crazy things. Yeah, crazy. You're now trying to argue your way out of this. Can Utah threaten nuclear action to get a Big Ten bid, Pat?
I mean, it's a nice bargaining chip to have, you know?
Purdue has one in Penn State, Ohio State. Like, this could be really something.
Right? Right. I mean, you could declare nuclear war on them. You could absolutely go after them. I don't know about whether they have missile capability there or not, but, you know, it can't be far behind. If you do have they have a TRIGA reactor, TRIGA, whatever that means, I'm sure the next step is fully weaponizing and threatening to launch at Big Ten headquarters and at Fox. So it would be a two-front war. You'd go to the West to go after Fox headquarters in Los Angeles, and then you'd go after Chicago as well. Now, you know, always risky to start a two-front war.
Very risky, yeah.
Don't overlook the Utes.
Definitely not how you want to do it, but...
No.
Yeah, all right. Thank you for that bit of war college.
Mm-hmm. Hey, ask Hitler how it went.
Yeah, ask the Russians war. Right now how it's going. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We do not wait till the end of the season to hand out the Heisman. We hand one out every single week. And so this is what we call our small sample Heisman.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the small sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Ross, do you have a small sample Heisman to hand out right now?
Yeah, we haven't talked much about the Maryland-Michigan game and Blake Corum. Michigan running back, 30 carries, 243 yards, two touchdowns. On the season, he's averaging almost 8 yards a carry, I believe. Just kind of carried Michigan to that victory because that was a good one. Maryland played really well, hung in there. Talia Tagovailoa looked pretty good, had kind of a gutsy performance, and didn't expect Maryland to hang like they did. And without Blake Corum, maybe the result is different. So led the Wolverines to victory, and he's going to be a force this year. The kid is explosive, and he's got speed, got power as well.
5 TDs, I think, last week, too. So I agree. Oof. I don't know how good Michigan is, but they certainly could be good. Pat, small sample Heisman, who you got?
Yes, sir. I'm going with Drew Pine, the Notre Dame quarterback. Hey, Notre Dame offense came to life. Now, part of that might be playing against the North Carolina defense, which is dreadful. But still, look, Notre Dame was struggling to do much of anything offensively. And Drew Pine stepping in for Tyler Buchner, who's hurt. He hurt his shoulder. Pine's been a loyal backup there. He's taken a lot of abuse from fans and everything because he hasn't been better. But he was very good against North Carolina. 24 of 34 for 289 yards, career high. All those are career highs. 3 touchdowns, also career high, no interceptions. So when the Irish needed an offensive spark, they found one as they continue to dig out from that 0-2 start. Good win on the road over previously undefeated North Carolina. Drew Pine, small sample Heisman.
I'm going to give an honorary mention to C.J. Stroud and the Ohio State offense. 5 touchdowns for C.J. Stroud. Their offense is so good, they made that Wisconsin game like you didn't have to watch after like one series. Yeah. You're like, okay, this game is over. Scary good. It's always the problem with these TV deals, right? Is they get a big game with Ohio State, Wisconsin, night game at the Shoe. No, who's watching? Like, there were so many good games, but who's going to watch that? I'm going to go with the guy we mentioned earlier, and that is Adrian Martinez of Kansas State. Martinez was, of course, at Nebraska. We said he did he was a good soldier there. Never could quite get it going. Complete dysfunction under Scott Frost's program. Transfers to Kansas State. His girlfriend is a soccer player at Kansas State. Gets a reboot and 234 yards passing, 148 yards rushing, 5 total touchdowns in a 41-34 victory over Oklahoma. That long scramble, which is like 50-something yards, was the play of the game. This is the Adrian Martinez that you like, and this Kansas State team is dangerous. So I love it. Good job, Adrian Martinez, getting out of Nebraska, sticking with it. You win my small sample Heisman. I bet you're having a good week. Right now. All right. We've said a lot of mean things on this podcast. We almost fired some people, all sorts of different things. Can we say something nice? Can we say something nice? And I'm looking at you, Pat 40. Is there any nice in you?
Oh, I am just going to pour sunshine all over the University of Missouri for their effort to keep Brian Harsin employed on Saturday. And it took some effort from Missouri to do it because Brian Harsin's Auburn team is bad. And there was a lot of talk that if Auburn lost that game, Harsin would be out on Sunday. Who knows? He might still be out. We're taping this Sunday morning. Stay tuned. But for now, it appears he's going to keep his job due to some incredible yeoman work from a Missouri program that historically just has found incredible ways to lose, but outdid itself to keep Brian Harsin employed. Just remarkable charity and largesse from the Tigers. Here's what they did to help Auburn win the game. End of regulation. They are on the Auburn 8-yard line. They call a timeout to ice their own kicker, Harrison Mevis, before he tries a 26-yard field goal. Harrison Mevis, who's had a really good career, he is a good kicker, misses from 26 yards out on the last play of regulation that would have won the game. So we go to overtime. What happens there? Auburn gets the ball first. 4th and 12, the Missouri 27. They bring in Anders Carlson, their kicker, to try a 44-yarder. He misses the kick. Oh, but wait, Missouri's offside. Move it 5 yards closer. He makes the kick. Missouri gets their turn in overtime. Nathaniel Pete, transfer from Stanford. He's been good. Takes it around the left side for 20 yards. He's going in for the winning touchdown. Oh, he fumbles at the 1, and Auburn recovers in the end zone. Game over. So that's missed field goal, offsides to allow a second chance for a field goal for Auburn, fumble in the end zone. Good job, Missouri. Way to keep Brian Harsin employed.
That was very nice.
That was really sweet. I'm going to be actually nice here. Dino Babers, kind of everybody wrote him off as he was going to be one of the many to get fired this cycle. In all the Orange have done is open the season 4-0. They won a tight one against Virginia on Saturday. They won it on a field goal at the last minute, but Syracuse 4-0 wins over three Power Five teams. Syracuse has, which is kind of a rarity right now, this early in the season. Louisville, Purdue, and Virginia. So give it up for Dino Babers, who entered the season having gone 5-7, 1-10, 5-7. So everybody pretty much had written off that he was going to get fired this year, but 4-0 Cuse. And guess who they have next? Guess who the next opponent is for Syracuse? Dan, it's Wagner. How about that? They get Wagner on October 1st. Maybe they can put up the 100.
The way they're playing, good for Dino Barber. He's a good guy, and that's a turnaround if there ever was one. Wagner. All right, we'll see. Jim Boeheim always schedules garbage non-conference teams, so I think Boeheim's coaching the team now. They're just going to. All right. I am going to say something nice about the Holy Cross Crusaders. The Holy Cross Crusaders. Who was it? Gordy Lockbaum, not playing.
No.
Remember the great Gordy Lockbaum, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who I think Sports Illustrated tried to claim should win the Heisman over, like, I don't know, like Bo Jackson or some crap like that. Like, Sports Illustrated is drunk on itself back in the day. You guys are much better now. I don't think you'd allow this. But the Holy Cross Crusaders are 4-0, first place in the Patriot Division, and you should not care, except they have a victory on a Hail Mary over Buffalo. It is the only team located in New England. This is a non-scholarship FCS team. The only team in all of New England, six states, many people, that has a victory over an FBS opponent, and it is Buffalo. Over the weekend, Boston College, UConn, and UMass lost 113-24.
Oh, my.
None of them have beaten an actual team. College football is dead in New England right now.
New England United is United in misery. Is
New England United could be, they barely beat Buffalo. We now have to bring Holy Cross in. Need four teams. Some of you know I had to go on I've said some not nice things about UMass football. I had to go on some kind of Twitter, what do they call it? Twitter square or something?
Twitter space.
I need a safe space. I got yelled at by a bunch of UMass fans. I will say this. UMass has incredibly, they have like 300 of the most passionate fans you've ever met. Because why the hell you'd support this team, I don't know. But they do.
I couldn't help but listen into some of that. And it was absolutely fantastic to hear them all berating Dan for not being more excited and loyal to his alma mater. And at one point labeling the other saying, you have an anti-aspirational brain. I love that.
This is true. I have a reality.
Yeah, right.
But as little as I think of UMass, UConn, and BC football at this point, they shouldn't be this bad.
No.
Good Lord. How does an entire region... We're going in... It's October now. Saturday is October 1st. How do you go September over?
It's bad. Really bad.
So UMass, you're not that bad because the other ones suck too. And they do have fans, and they like going to the farmer's market before the games, and maybe they get something good going.
They want the recruits to go to the farmer's market.
I'm done talking about UMass.
Take them to see the leaves turn.
Great foliage coming up. Great games to be watching. Go to the Holy Cross game. Go to Holy Cross.
Worcester. Go.
Don't go to BC. Don't go to UConn. Don't go to go to Holy Cross. Up there in Worcester, you'll be in the hills, Fitton Field. It's going to look great. That's my something nice. All right. We'll be back Tuesday, preview week 5. Who knows what else will happen. Hopefully, we have a nuclear calm the next couple days. No one detonates a bomb or a reactor. Stay calm, people. Stay off the yik-yak. It's just college football. It just means more. Talk to you later.